It's Thursday, April 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, talks about Syria's future have resumed.
The Russians, on the other hand, want to win in Aleppo. They want to consolidate their hold on Palmyra, where they are right now, and maybe push up a little bit more towards some linkage with the friendly Kurds.
Russia continues its push for territory in Syria. Also ahead, good times on Wall Street, for now. Disney does well in China. Fifth Harmony has one album for you. It's all on today's International Edition. Proximity talks on Syria's political future have resumed in Geneva, with members of the opposition High Negotiations Committee aimed at ending more than 5 years of civil war. The key obstacle is the future of President Bashar al-Assad. It comes amid growing concerns about renewed fighting that could jeopardize a six-week-old cessation of hostilities. Ahead of the talks, UN envoy Stefan de Mistura met with Syrian leaders in Damascus on Monday and Tuesday, Iranian authorities in Tehran.
And we agreed that what is very important is that cessation of hostilities continues, that humanitarian aid reaches every Syrian, in particular, of course, those areas besieged, but every Syrian, and three, that the political process leading to a political transition is now crucially urgent. And I think it's very important for me to consult the Iranian authorities because they do have an influence and they've been giving me, in particular, very much advice which I've been using and will be continued to use in the future talks.
The government delegation is due in Geneva later this week. U.S. UN Ambassador Samantha Power told reporters on Tuesday she believes the ceasefire is slipping and the environment for the proximity talks in Geneva has become more fragile. She expressed alarm at the prospect of a government offensive to retake the northern city of Aleppo. Another cause for tension has been the parliamentary elections held Wednesday in areas controlled by the government. The opposition has called the vote illegitimate and provocative. Regional analyst Heba El Shalzi of George Mason University in Virginia tells VOA's Victor Beatty that she's skeptical of the government's motive.
When you look at the tactics of this regime, you look at a regime that is definitely trying to stay in power, using every possible opportunity to delay, to gain time, every possible sort of diversion, if you will, in order to find its place and regain any kind of momentum it feels it's lost. This is not a regime or a person in Bashar al-Assad who's going to someday sort of wake up and smell the coffee and realize that the game is over and that he needs to, for his people's sake, to step down. He doesn't think that way.
The U.S. U.N. Ambassador Samantha Power on Tuesday said at the U.N., right now there are signs referring to the ceasefire that this is slipping and it's much more delicate environment for the U.N. envoy Stefan de Mistura to convene political talks. Is the ceasefire slipping in your view?
It seems that way, unfortunately, because really who is going to be suffering? It's the people.
In Geneva, the second round of these so-called political transition talks is supposed to get underway this week. What are the prospects of success in your view?
I think they'll take place. Now, success is how you define it. You know, when you come to negotiations, you come to the table, you have to have something called goodwill. There is not always goodwill at that table in Geneva, and I don't believe that the regime is a representative of what we consider to be goodwill.
Foreign policy analyst Jonathan Adelman says the talks in Geneva reconvene as Russian and Iranian-backed government forces continue to rack up battlefield successes and may be preparing an assault on the northern city of Aleppo.
That has at least some hope that eventually there will be an end to the civil war, because then the Russian-led forces, Bashar Assad, will have Latakia, they will have Aleppo, they will have Damascus, the three cities that they really want.
Well, how important, then, is the battle for Aleppo that seems to be building?
Critical. Absolutely critical. And, you know, as a Westerner, I hate to wish the Russians well, but the situation has just been so horrible for so long. What I get, as somebody who has studied Russia since the 1970s, is that Vladimir Putin, obviously, is very capable of being deceitful and doing a number of bad things, but I think the fact that he has withdrawn a substantial number of his planes and that he has also made very broad hints that he wants to get rid of Bashar Assad. Suggests to me that the Russians want to win. They then want to set up a new kind of government on the parts of the territory that they've been helping with. And from their point of view, that's enough.
The next round of political transition talks is supposed to get underway this week in Geneva. UN envoy Stefan de Mistura says he's looking for quite concrete results. Is that overly optimistic?
The results that he wants are overly optimistic, but we wish him the best. I mean, he clearly wants to work towards, you know, a ceasefire that is permanent, to figuring out what Syria will look like afterwards. The Russians, on the other hand, want to win in Aleppo. They want to consolidate their hold on Palmyra, where they are right now, and maybe push up a little bit more towards some linkage with the friendly Kurds. So I wish him well. I think the situation is almost incredibly out of hand. But what we want, I think what we all want to see, is some kind of negotiated settlement, which will not be perfect, but which will put an end to this butchery of innocent civilians.
While the opposition demands Mr. Assad step down from power, the Syrian leader has said a future Syrian government must include members of the opposition, independents, and loyalists to the regime. We turn now to our social media segment. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is right here in Studio 22 to tell us what people are talking about online. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
What do you have for us today?
Let's take a look at the latest buzz on the U.S. presidential election. GOP frontrunner Donald Trump appeared in Tuesday's CNN town hall with his family, and the hashtag that goes with it is hashtag Trump family. Trump himself shared a clip from the event on Facebook this morning.
Well, let's check out what the public reaction is like. What are the responses so far?
So one of the most liked comments reads like this: watched it, loved it. They say it's time for a female president. Well, after Trump is elected twice, our next president should be Ivanka. Wow, she's poised, articulate, calm, educated, and beautiful. More than 3,000 people liked that reply, and of course, it's referring to one of his daughters, Ivanka Trump. But some people found it interesting that whenever he's referring to his wife or daughter's TV appearance, he always says, enjoy, and some people found it to be indicative of Trump's perception of women.
Well, there are many takes on Donald Trump and women. Let's move on to the Democratic side. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio seems to be in rather the hot seat this week. Tell us about that.
You're absolutely right. Many media outlets are reporting on a joke he made during an exchange with Democrat frontrunner Hillary Clinton at an event in New York, and here's how it went down. She said, playfully, it took him long enough to endorse her presidential bid. And he replied, sorry, Hillary, I was running on CP time. Jim, honestly, I had to Google what CP time means, but apparently it refers to colored people time, indicating that ethnic minorities are usually later than punctual. So judging by the media and the public reaction on social media, I think it's safe to say some people found it to be unnecessary and not politically correct.
Yes, definitely. Well, it's all over the internet, I see.
It is. And somewhat surprisingly, he still shared the clip of the banter on his Facebook. He captioned it, "What can I say? She stole the show. Could not have been happier to close out the hashtag Inner Circle dinner tonight with my friend Hillary Clinton. Hashtag I am with her." But some of the replies to that post did point out that if a conservative politician made that joke, the outrage would have been much bigger. Jim?
Well, a lot of things are strange in politics, and I guess we can put that in that category. Thanks for the wrap-up, G. She tweets for our program's account at VOA_IE. She's also on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm out there as well at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. U.S. financial markets had a very good day as the world's biggest bank, J.P. Morgan, posted a solid earnings report, and that boosted the sagging financial sector, and energy stocks did well for a second day. Let's put it all in perspective. To join us is VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino from New York. Jill, let's start with J.P. Morgan.
They had a great day to kick off the bank earnings seasons. They beat on the top and bottom line, which was certainly great for the entire sector. So we saw peer names such as Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Citigroup all trade in tandem with the good earnings out of J.P. Morgan. They look pretty good. Anytime we see a bottom line beat where you're seeing revenue making up the earnings beat versus just cost cutting, that's a positive sign. The only question some analysts are asking themselves, while we did beat on the top and bottom line, it's still lower than numbers from a year ago. So we're going to have to see really how Bank of America and Wells Fargo, they report on Thursday, how Citigroup reports on Friday, if this is a trend, and we could potentially see the trajectory of the banks moving higher going forward. The big catalyst here is getting interest rates back up a little bit higher, because that is how banks grow their earnings and their revenue and their net interest margin. So that's really what the wild card is right now. But it seems, just by isolating J.P. Morgan's report, and Jamie Dimon is one of the most well-loved CEOs on the street, he really is running a tight ship, and it's showing in the numbers.
And while the financial sector has been beaten down in recent weeks and months, so has the energy sector. We've seen a rebound there.
Yeah, this was actually some really great trading that we saw on Tuesday at 10:22 a.m. Eastern. There was a headline that hit the tape, that's what we call it in trader lingo, that Interfax was reporting that Saudi Arabia and Russia were making a deal for freezes on oil production, not cuts, but freezes, and that sent oil skyrocketing higher, and of course the market in tandem with that. Now, Russia came out and said they weren't having any conversations. Perhaps this was a precursor into the all-important meeting that OPEC and non-OPEC producing nations are having this Sunday in Doha, Qatar. The reason why this meeting is so important is it's OPEC and non-OPEC. And what the market is looking for here is who's going to capitulate and make some cuts. The U.S. seems to be the only producer that's cutting right now. We need to start to see these major swing producers like Iran, Saudi Arabia, start to make some cuts. So that's really what's going to position trade for Monday. If oil gets a boost on this, so does the S&P. If expectations aren't met, it's going to be a tough day for the S&P on Monday.
A lot for us to watch out for, and we thank Jill Malandrino for giving us the latest update from New York. Jill, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Well, making money inside China can be a difficult prospect for Western firms, but one that is having a lot of success is Disney, with popular movies and now a big new theme park. Matthew Pressburg follows entertainment business for International Business Times and joins us. First, Matt, Disney's Marvel films are a huge box office hit.
With the Marvel entertainment universe, that's been huge there. I mean, Disney's appetite for Marvel movies has really been astonishing. I mean, Avengers Age of Ultron made over $200 million there, and even Ant-Man, which is a very forgettable movie out here, was a $100 million movie in China.
Well, considering the production costs, China is a very lucrative market then for Disney.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Marvel universe has proven to play well there, and the animated movies do as well. Inside Out did quite well there, and Zootopia has really been the hit of the year. Zootopia has been in theaters. It just got an extra two-week run, so this thing is, you know, already the biggest animated movie ever in China, the biggest Disney movie ever in China, and it just keeps piling on those records.
Disney may have a little bit of an advantage because China only lets a certain number of Western films in each year, and of course they have to go through a censor board over there, mm-hmm. and the fantasy-type films probably are not as sensitive as some of the other movies.
That is true. I mean, Disney's movies are generally not the most controversial topic, which is kind of funny because Zootopia actually does have a social justice message, but it seems like the censors were okay with that. But for the most part, yes, it's superheroes, it's cute animals, it's the kind of stuff that, you know, the censors are not really going to look at too closely and are not going to, you know, raise a lot of controversy once playing in China.
Well, as far as the physical presence goes, we're all familiar with Disneyland and Disney World in the United States, and Disney has expanded worldwide into France, and of course, Shanghai is the big destination now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's opening June 16th in Shanghai. It's going to be potentially the most visited Disney theme park ever. It's been in the process for about 15 years now, and so it's really been a long-time project. It's been a dream of Disney CEO Bob Iger. Really, since he took over the top job, he's been very focused on China. He's been out there multiple times a year, and, you know, so far, the project looks great. It was, you know, delayed. It was supposed to open the end of last year. It was pushed to the summer, but I haven't heard anything yet. It looks primed for the June 16th opening, and, you know, everybody I've said who's been there, who's seen the site, says it's, you know, the best one yet.
Things in China seem to move quite rapidly. A 15-year plan is a long time for a Chinese venture.
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, there's been many different Chinese leaders and bureaucrats and everything. So, yeah, I mean, 15 years of that plan, it's quite a duration.
Compared to some of the other theme parks, I mean, what kind of attendance are they looking for comparatively?
I believe Tokyo Disneyland has about 17 million visitors a year, I want to say, and so they think they can beat that.
Being a country that invented fireworks, I'm sure they'll love the daily displays at Disney.
Absolutely. So I guess, you know, one other thing is that animation is the kind of thing that we could expect a lot more. Disney's kind of cracked the code on animation in China, Inside Out, Zootopia. And what we're seeing now is a lot of Chinese film companies are really keenly interested in starting animation departments, coming in and bringing in animators. And so Disney kind of showing the fact that animated movies can be huge hits in the Chinese box office may have actually influenced some Chinese film executives to dedicate more resources into that.
So we may see a Chinese version of perhaps the Japanese anime, where they create their own kind of cultural animation.
Absolutely. I mean, with the investment that they're making of that, that's absolutely something we could definitely see. I mean, animation does very well, and it's a kind of movie where subtitles or dubbing, you know, it's not as distracting. You can actually make the characters' mouths move with different languages.
The language is Mandarin. It'll be interesting to see how all of it translates in Disney.
Absolutely.
It's a small world, after all.
It really is. You know, I'm sure that ride will be, you know, looking pretty amazing at the Shanghai Park.
International Business Times entertainment business reporter Matthew Pressburg. Be sure to catch his article online. With Captain America Civil War, Disney is poised to keep China box office momentum going. Matt, thanks so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Thanks so much, Jim.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
Well, there's new music out, and International Edition's Susan Yockey and Larry London, the host of Border Crossings, have the latest on what many of us might be listening to.
The musical group Fifth Harmony has a new album coming out with a new single, and to tell us all about it is Larry London of Border Crossings. Welcome, Larry.
Well, thank you, Susan. Yes, Fifth Harmony are coming out with their second album within 1 year.
Wow.
And that's kind of unusual, but they have been recording and writing and producing lots and lots of music. So the first album, Reflections, came out last year, and now we're waiting for the second album. May 27th is the release date. The new album is called 727, which, interestingly enough, is the day they were discovered on The X Factor.
Oh, that's neat.
So that's why they decided to call the new album 727. They say this album is going to be a little different for their fans than the first album was, in that it will be more R&B, more hip-hop oriented. They've worked with some hip-hop producers on the new album. The girls keep getting asked the same question, are you breaking up, are you breaking up? And at first they said, well, one day we will. And now, you know, they're saying less of that. They're saying, no, our plan is to stay together, you know, and ride this out. So we'll see how it all works out for Fifth Harmony. But very talented young ladies. And I have had them on my show several times.
Oh.
They're a pleasure to talk to. They're a lot of fun. And in a day and age where, you know, it seems that female artists reign supreme, they've got a lot going for them. They've got a huge fan group, which is called the Harmonizers. That's what their fan club's known as. And I think the new album will be good, 727. You don't gotta go to
You're going to place this one new single anywhere, the Work From Home?
Yeah, you know, the interesting story behind the new single for them was that they were going to call it Work. But they decided that Rihanna's song Work would confuse the fans and confuse the audience because Rihanna's Work has been number one now for 6 weeks.
Right.
And so they changed the name of it to Work From Home. So it'd give it a
I like it. I think it's cute.
Yeah, and I think we should do more of that.
Okay. Well, Larry, remind our listeners where they can find you.
Well, thank you, Susan. Fifth Harmony can be found around the world, and Larry London can be found on Border Crossings. You can find me several places. You can go to the voanews.com website and search Larry London. It'll probably show you where I am. The name of the show is Border Crossings, or you can go to facebook.com/VOA Larry London.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Larry.
Thank you.
While we're all talking about finding things, you can find International Edition at voanews.com and also on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Dan Crafton, can be found within our studio confines. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you have a wonderful day today.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
22 years ago, one of the worst crimes against humanity in the 20th century occurred in Rwanda. More than 800,000 men, women, and children were systematically murdered during 100 days of unspeakable violence. The killings, deliberately planned and sanctioned by the ethnic Hutu-led government, began in earnest April 7, 1994, the day after a plane carrying the presidents of Rwanda and Burundi was shot down, killing both leaders. Ethnic Tutsi citizens, a minority in the country's population of about 7 million, were specifically targeted. However, politically moderate Hutu and ethnic Twa sympathizers were also killed. "We honor not just the victims," said President Barack Obama in a written statement delivered on the commemoration of the 22nd anniversary of the genocide, "but also those who risk their lives to save others, as well as the survivors who carry the memories of these atrocities. It is important to mark these occasions in order to remind ourselves," said President Obama, "of our common humanity and shared commitment to protecting civilians and ensuring that mass atrocities of this magnitude never happen again." Over the last two decades, Rwanda has made progress in moving beyond these horrible crimes and in building a more peaceful and prosperous future for its citizens. The United States remains deeply committed to preventing the horror of mass atrocities and genocide from occurring again, and to continuing to work with the people of Rwanda and the international community to finish the task of bringing those responsible for those heinous acts to justice.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.